report. I don't know if council is familiar with our lighting system, but, you know, if the yellow light comes on, kind of start wrapping up. If the red light comes on, stop. And it's very simple. And we are looking forward to the arguments today. We have two cases on the docket, and I'll call the first one, number 25-40300, United States of America versus Brown, and United States America versus Nero, which is 25-40402. Cases are consolidated, USA versus Nero, USA versus Brown. Let's see, Mr. Mongaros. You're up first. You'll have 8 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court.
Good morning.
Relying primarily on speculation, the government failed to prove Ms. Brown knowingly agreed or even entered into a conspiracy to distribute drugs. Therefore, the evidence is legally insufficient to support the jury's guilty verdict. This is further compounded by the unnecessary testimony of the government's quote-unquote cold expert, Jeff Davis. At the outset, he kind of gets back to basics with the cold expert. His testimony was not only too general, it doesn't pass the muster of rules of evidence 402 and even 403, but just focusing just on the relevance issue of 402. What we have here is, because he's a cold expert, he's not involved necessarily in the case. He has no knowledge of Brown, or her.
That may be an accepted term, but just for our purposes, when you say cold expert, you mean?
Meaning that he had, he got on this case 2 days prior.
Okay.
Cold meaning, and that's how the government described him in the transcript. So I guess, yes.
No, I just wanted to understand what you mean.
No knowledge of the case, no involvement. How about that? He might have had knowledge of fentanyl, but no knowledge of the case.
Okay.
And so, and here, because of that, his testimony was too general, and this court in Hall has said something very similar to that instance, where if it's too general and not relevant, it just doesn't meet the muster of rules of evidence 402. And here, he couldn't have testified that because Brown's role here was driving the car. There's no evidence that she had a source of supply. There was no evidence she got online to go get a pill press. There's no evidence she had contact with China. There was no evidence she had contact with Mexico. And then furthermore, there's no evidence she was in any part of distribution of this. And so part of his testimony was a scare, all of his testimony was in essence kind of to scare the jury. And that's why I said sufficiency is kind of compounded by his testimony. Because without that testimony, Mr. Davis says fentanyl bad, basically. Hey, we have this fentanyl. What is it used for? Well, you go to China, then you go to Mexico, and then you have to distribute it somewhere in this pill form, and it's worth millions and millions of dollars.
So we have cases all the time where a law enforcement officer who may or may not have been involved in the investigation comes in and testifies about how the drug trade works, how the specific drug at issue is traded and trafficked, and that sort of thing. How is this not that?
Agreed, and I've been involved in those cases where there's at least some sort of co-conspirator where you have that conduct, right? Here, there's no conduct of the beginning or the end. And here, it's almost...
Midway through. I mean, you've got all these text messages back and forth. You've got all this... I thought there was evidence of prior transactions exactly along the lines where she was running with the car from Phoenix to Houston and that sort of thing. I mean...
Yes, Your Honor. And that gets to my next point, actually. It's perfect. The context that the government uses are, in essence, two things. They discuss, quote-unquote, pills. A day prior to this, Ms. Brown talks about taking two pills, consumption.
Yeah, but she had enough for almost a million pills in the car with her.
Agreed. Well, no, she didn't have pills, Your Honor. This was.
I know she didn't have, but she had the quantity enough to make, what, almost 900-something, 99,000 pills.
Agreed on that. But talking about taking consumption of pills, which we don't know what it is, it's just pills. It could have been Xanax. We don't know, in essence, what it is, but we
That's
do
a jury
know.
Question, though, isn't it?
It is, but what we do know is, and this is why the expert here is saying, here we have Ms. Brown consuming two pills. And then now we're going to move that into, well, all of a sudden she must be distributing this fentanyl that's in her car. They don't even discuss the heroin. in their heart or how that's broken down. And that was a tactic by the government. Fentanyl bad. We don't have enough to show. We don't have any co-conspirator testimony. We don't have any actually other co-conspirators than Mr. Nero. And going back to what the court asked, you have 2 years of text messages. There's no transactions during that time period. Ms. Brown drove a car, another van, 2 years prior. That's the first look we have in Ms. Brown, is that she's driving a car. She goes into a x-ray machine, and there's no drugs. So the only transaction we have of Ms. Brown and Mr. Nero is 2 years prior of Ms. Brown doing the same conduct she believed she was doing on the date of arrest.
And what did she believe she was doing?
Driving a car from point A to point B.
Why?
I think that's unknown.
It's not just point A to point B. This is Phoenix to Houston.
Correct, Your Honor. Which is still a point A to point B. She's told to get, just like she was in 2 years prior, which she was told, drive a car from point A to point B.
But put yourself in the jury's shoes.
Yes, Your Honor.
Series of one-way flights.
Yes.
Texts about x-rays and customs and all this, the border protection, excuse me. Why would she fly halfway across the country and then drive a car at least for 2 years, right? We have 2 years of text messages and travel records. Why would she do that if it wasn't to traffic drugs? What would be a give me any plausible theory that the jury heard as to why she would do that?
Of why she, okay.
But, I'm sorry, when I say plausible, I mean non-illegal.
Non-illegal, correct. So driving a car, if your role is just Nero does not have the time to drive, and I won't.
50 times. So he has 50 cars.
Mr. Nero.
Has 50. I realize Yes. You don't represent Mr. Nero, but the jury Yes. Hears 50 cars.
Correct.
And so she's going to drive some subset of those. Why?
We don't have enough evidence. The government didn't present enough evidence here to show. They have phone and phone records. They did not show that Ms. Brown drove Mr. Nero's 50 cars. So what we have is Ms. Brown driving her role, meaning drive a car because Nero doesn't want it either. It's going to be in Atlanta doing something else. Drive a car from point A to point B. We don't have any discussion of there's going to be drugs in the car. In fact, the first window we have is there's no drugs in the car. And so the plausible explanation is her role is what I put in here. Is her role is to drive a car to point A to point B. The
but
agreement
for what?
Was.
Is it for a business enterprise? Is it for getting a kid from college to home or vice versa? Is it for any reason that's been articulated by the defendants in the case?
Not by the defendants, but we don't have the burden of proof at the trial level. I understand what we have here now, a plausible explanation. I do understand that. The plausible explanation is, yes, couriers are used just to drive a car from point A to point B.
To courier what?
Well, here, the car. So maybe there was going to be delivery somewhere else, but we don't know because there's
But
no
it's a rental in. Car, so she's definitely not couriering the car. So, like, I realize it's not your burden of proof at trial, but it's certainly your burden now.
Correct. Now it is.
So I need to have some explanation. If it's not to courier $10 million in fentanyl,
right. What
is the reason?
Just like it was 2 years prior, to drive the car from point A to point B.
Yeah, but she's not working for Enterprise.
No, Your Honor.
The rental car company doesn't benefit from this whatsoever. Somebody's paying for a rental car to go from point A to point B.
Agreed.
And then turn the car in.
And just like many cases before, the top of a conspiracy doesn't necessarily on the going down to the bottom level of the conspiracy. They might be testing, hey, is this car going to get pulled over by a point here? I'm at it.
Thank you, Mr. Mongers. You have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Ms. Brown. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Before I begin, one correction to our opening brief. At the bottom of page 431, a word was dropped. The sentence should read, at the time the confession was admitted, the jury was not admonished not to use it against Mr. Nero. The record confirms it. The only instruction that touching these statements is the co-conspirator instruction at page 169, and I have notified government counsel about this. May it please the court. Kristen Brown for appellant Clarence Nero. The government's theory was because Clarence Nero rented a van and because the woman driving it was his girlfriend, he must have agreed to join a 4-kilogram fentanyl and heroin conspiracy. To bridge that gap, the government's brief tells this court at page 23 that officers seized $149,500 from him, from Nero, after he left a Phoenix drug house. But the government's own statement of facts, just 13 pages earlier, says otherwise. That money was recovered from the passenger seat of a red Chevrolet Sonic driven by Jesus Enriquez, a different man, in a different vehicle, in a different traffic stop, by a different officer. Mr. Nero's truck was stopped later, and it was searched with his consent. Officers found nothing, no drugs, no money, and that encounter never produced a charge or even a complaint. Similarly, in the government's brief at page 22, it says that during that traffic stop, Nero got out of the truck and tried to run away while carrying a backpack. But that was not Nero. That was Nero's passenger that got out of his car and fled. So neither one of those can be considered circumstances of guilt. If you strip away the misstatements here, what remains is a rental agreement, a romantic relationship, and text messages that the government's own case agent conceded could not be interpreted without his word speculating. Under Pettigrew, a verdict may not rest on an overly attenuated piling on of inference after inference. And that's what this verdict is. I'd like to start with sufficiency and then turn to the Bruton violation, where the government now asks this court to hold for the first time that a defendant's statements to a police officer during a traffic stop are co-conspirator statements in furtherance of the very conspiracy that the officer is investigating. Turning to sufficiency, I want to be precise about what we're not arguing. We're not asking this court to reweigh evidence. We accept that a conspiracy can be proven tacitly and circumstantially, with every inference drawn for the jury's verdict. Our argument is that even with every inference, the record contains no evidence, direct or circumstantial, that Clarence Nero knew there were drugs in that van.
Why did he rent 50 one-way vans?
Unfortunately, the record doesn't tell us why.
So you can say to the jury, you should not infer a pattern of illegality from the fact that the man was spending a lot of money over many years to rent 50 vans for one-way trips halfway across the country. But I don't understand how you can carry your burden in our court if you have no explanation that is even remotely innocent. You have to give me that's odd, that without any evidence that he's couriering, he's delivering televisions, he's working for Enterprise, as Judge Wilson points out, what conceivable, I can't think of a possible reason why you would fly from Atlanta or New Orleans to Phoenix and vice versa and then drive halfway across the country, to just accumulate miles on a rental car with a screwdriver? I don't get it.
Maybe he had Enterprise Mileage Club. Yeah. I just don't know.
But your point is a matter of law that shouldn't matter.
My point is
none of us in the courtroom can figure out why he would do it if it wasn't to traffic $10 million in fentanyl.
Well, I don't think the evidence proves that it was to traffic.
Well, but then you've got the text message thread that you said. They can be read any number of ways. They're not necessarily smoking guns or silver bullets, I guess, whatever metaphor. But you still have the thread between the two of them, and they're clearly talking about something. So that's evidence. It's evidence of what they were doing. And it does not go to Judge Oldham's point that, oh, this is totally legitimate. We're doing this for whatever reason that's easily explicable. It suggests the other way.
It certainly doesn't tell us any.
It certainly doesn't tell us, but it's evidence. It's not circumstantial evidence. It is actual communications between the two of them.
I would agree with that. But you also have to consider that everything else the government offers, which includes the text messages that you're talking about, most of those statements, really all of those statements that he's using, the government's using, belongs to Brown, not Nero. Her side of the text messages, her roadside statements, her demeanor, her lies about the route.
But she called him at the roadside, didn't she?
She called him at the roadside.
And the officer observed her demeanor and
yes.
What she was saying on her end of things.
And she was saying what she said on her end of things, and she was saying what she said he was saying on the end of things. But consciousness of guilt is not a communicable condition. He's not charged with what she says. Her false exculpatory statements say nothing about what he knew. And the texts that the government calls evidence of a drug company are the same texts that Agent Hunt could not decode without speculating.
So when she says, I took my last two pills, and he says, you forgot you've got a pill guy now, and she says, well, I like his better, and he says, oh, you like his better, you don't think that a rational juror could understand that Nero was the pill guy?
No, I certainly didn't read it that way.
What do you think they were saying?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, please. I didn't mean to talk over you.
I didn't either.
It's okay.
I believe what he said was, I forgot you have a pill guy.
Hmm.
Not two, but I forgot you have a pill guy. And because she was talking about that she'd taken her last pills. I forgot you have a pill guy. That doesn't implicate him as being a pill guy. So she said, yeah, I like his pills better. Now, better than what? She doesn't say. But it could be better than, I don't know, the ones she got around the corner last time. Who knows? But she likes those pills. And that's talking about personal use. And that's the only
Mongeris was making the point that he reads that to be personal consumption.
I agree.
You read those.
I read it the same way.
Referring to personal consumption.
I do. I read it.
Recognizing, of course, that in plenty of cases we have people involved in drug transactions who sort of talk in a, let's say, an oblique way about what they're doing, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm sure. I'm sure
it's possible. Right. Sometimes
I'm not involved
people,
in those, but
right.
Yes, I would assume that is true in cases okay. I've had and seen that's been that way. But I think that, you know, you have a lot of Hunt's speculation as to what these messages mean. Mm-hmm. But then when he's asked on the other side, so I'm just looking at it in the context of the business enterprise. So all of his interpretations were towards the goal they want to achieve, the government wants to achieve, the conviction they want to achieve. And when faced with any other alternative, well, I could speculate, was what he said. But he was already speculating. So we get all of this speculation, and speculation is not a reasonable inference. So we don't get to use all of those speculative comments as evidence. And that's what the government wants to use as evidence. Moving very, very quickly onto Bruton, yeah. We would just say, I guess we'll rest on our brief in this 7 seconds here.
Well, you have time
here.
For rebuttal as well.
Yes.
On that.
And we'll speak to you on rebuttal.
Thank you.
Thank you,
thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Rapp, it is your turn, sir. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, counsel, Christopher Rapp of the United States. I want to begin with a question neither of my friends could answer. Judge Oldham's questions about what innocent explanation could there be? And the answer, well, you didn't get an answer. And that sort of tells you all you need to know. Further, even if they could have given you an answer, it's distinctly the jury's job to weigh the explanations. That's fact-finding by the jury. And that's what we have here, and we have, you know, all the laws cited in the briefs. The jury's free to choose between alternate explanations. That's Winkler. A couple other things. They say simultaneously, and it's I'm struggling to square these two. There is zero evidence, meaning the evidence was insufficient to convict them of a conspiracy. And when Villarreal says value is proof of knowledge, which is one of the elements of the crime, they're saying there's no knowledge of agreements, no knowledge that drugs were there, no knowledge of conspiracy. So we say, okay, here you go. Here's some proof of knowledge. And they say, no, that's improper, not relevant. So none of that squares. The evidence is actually overwhelming. A rational jury could reasonably, more than reasonably, conclude that there was evidence sufficient to convict. The fact is we have 4 kilograms of fentanyl and heroin seized. It's not so much a hidden compartment. It's where speakers should go in a van that were removed and a screwdriver that could do the exact job of removing those speakers was found in the van itself. There was fentanyl in there. She's lying about her route roadside. He's rented the van. He's done it nearly 50 times, as Judge Oldham repeatedly referred to. There is no innocent explanation for that. There's no smart business explanation for it. And we didn't go through this in detail at the trial, but it was in evidence as an exhibit. If you look at those rental records, I mean, it's amazing. He's executive platinum status at literally every rental car company in the country, I think, except for Enterprise, which is impressive if you're I don't know, running some sort of traveling salesman business, but that's not in the record. What's in the record is that they're drug dealers. When they text each other of being as part of a company that's at 380, she refers to him as CEO at 527 in the record. And this Arizona thing, they say there's no drugs there. I don't think that's exactly the record. Drugs weren't recovered, but she's very worried about Border Patrol checkpoints. She's texting him about risking her freedom at...
You're talking about the X-ray of the initial incident that preceded this?
2019, again, in Arizona. So that's what I think the reasonable inference from that is what spooked her. And she's driving hundreds of miles out of her way. What does that do? It avoids Border Patrol checkpoints. We're in New Orleans. If you want to go to Houston, you take I-10. If you want to go to Phoenix from Houston, a long drive, you take Interstate 10. Unless you have some reason to be off Interstate 10, that would be Border Patrol checkpoints. And the record is replete with that. What is that? That's a guilty conscience. And that is evidence for a jury to convict on. Same thing. Value of the narcotics is proof of an element. That expert does that.
So there were, Mr. Monger has made some arguments about the expert, Jeff Davis,
yes.
I believe, said testimony was too general, was merely to, quote, scare the jury. What is your response to that?
We could not disagree more, Your Honor.
Well, I figured you disagree. What is your response?
So, yes, Your Honor. For the entire point is to get to value. With the inference from that amount of value is proof of knowledge. That comes from, it's Villarreal says that. This court has held. So how do we get to value? Well, you have a big brick of heroin and fentanyl. When they're talking about pills, which also is can be taken to mean knowledge, maybe not of distribution, but certainly knowledge of fentanyl. So how do you get from fentanyl in a brick to fentanyl in a pill? You need to explain that to give context. That's what that expert did. He set up the process to get to the ultimate point, which is street value that was in that van that there, again, he rented, she drove, she's lying about the route. And just back to that a little bit, she didn't, despite him renting the van from, and I can't remember offhand which rental car company it was, it's very telling that where she had to go pick it up in Phoenix, right by the airport, and not at the Avis at the airport or the Hertz at the airport, but some convenience store parking lot. So she had to go pick it up from a guy, which leads to the strong inference that the van was dropped off. Someone at his instructions put drugs in the van and she was to return the van. And with that amount of value, the one thing a drug dealer would not want to have is witnesses. So she's in on it is the inference that flows. It's not to scare a jury. It's to meet an element of proof.
Okay. There was discussion from Ms. Brown about the $149,000, and probably got the amount wrong. The argument was it was not recovered from Nero, it was recovered from someone else in a different car.
Sure, and the fact section of the government's brief lays out exactly the details of that. This is collective action. So whether it was recovered from him personally or recovered from his accomplice or co-conspirator is legally, it's distinct. So
same answer for the backpack.
Exactly. All of those things are collective action. The house he came out of is where the ledger that matched the amount seized from someone else, those were symbiotic in synthesis. So this is collective action. And if we phrased it inelegantly, I apologize.
No, I'm not saying that. I was just wondering what your response was.
One other issue that was touched on, I know... It was a Bruden claim.
Yeah.
And I just want to come here just so the court isn't left with any ambiguity on this. When she is roadside, the deputy, as he testified, his initial intent was to just give her a warning and have her go on her way. And having her go on her way is exactly what this drug conspiracy would have wanted. I want those drugs back to New Orleans where the car had to be returned. What would aid that process? Getting this deputy exactly what he asked for, the proof of the rental to allow him to issue his warning, and then she could be on the road. So when they're talking to each other, they're helping that process along, which is helping the conspiracy along by ultimately letting her go. That didn't happen. But the idea would be the statements would get her on her way to further the goals of the conspiracy. So what is this? This is a pretty cut and dry hearsay exception of a co-conspirator statement in furtherance of the conspiracy. Crawford itself says recognized hearsay exceptions are not testimonial, and then lists two specific examples. One of the two is co-conspirator statements, the other being business records. So it's, for your honors, that's just a direct application of the language from Crawford, the Supreme Court itself. So this is not testimonial. We're not asking you to do anything new or different or anything like that. We're just asking you to apply your existing law. And I see if I don't have much else I wanted to cover. If there's any other topics the court has questions on, I'd be happy to take those on.
Anything else?
Nope, sir.
Anything else? No, thank you. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honors. We ask you to affirm the verdict and affirm the sentences, and we'll waive the rest of our time.
Thank you. Mr. Mongers, you have a couple of minutes for rebuttal. I realize that's not much, but do your best.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Your Honor.
You're welcome.
I want to remind the court that when mere presence is not enough, and what Ortega, Reyna, and this court and Barra have said is when it's in a secret compartment, there's a non-exhaustive list to look at. Nervousness, failure to eye contact, implausible explanations, possession of cash, remarkable alterations to the vehicle. This took two experienced officers over an hour to find. There's no doubt there's a secret compartment here. That leads into the knowledge aspect. Throughout these text messages for 2 years, there's still not that link to her entering into a conspiracy to distribute drugs. That's what the government just said. The jury can make an inference, but there is no proof that she had knowledge of the amount of drugs, which was one of our points of error and insufficiency, which they have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt, which makes a difference on the statutory minimum, which then leads to my minor role aspect. Because without that statutory minimum, this becomes a plain error, substantial, where I think we can get that last prong in plain error, meaning that her sentence goes from 188, if she got her minor role, to 108. And so this court, just as recently as in U.S. v. Lopez, has said an incorrect guideline range will be sufficient to show reasonable probability of a different outcome. And so the government itself, at sentencing, said her role is akin to being a bus driver. I know now, when she was sentenced, we don't have Amendment 833 and, the primary function when she was sentenced. But if you look at her primary function now, it is a courier. And what the law says now, I know it's not at the time, but the law says now is if you're only a courier, and that's what the government described her as, you should receive a minor role.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I didn't want to interrupt your rebuttal time to make sure you had your full 2 minutes.
Thank you.
The three plea agreements that failed because of the Rule 11 colloquy,
yes,
before trial, what was the sentencing range that she was facing if she had pled guilty?
I believe it was the same range.
There wasn't going to be dismissed charges or something?
No, Your Honor.
It still could have been 180.
In essence, pleading to, and as the court knows, if you get a 5K, you can get below the statutory minimum. But yes, if she actually played, it would have been a 10. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Brown.
In my very brief 2 minutes.
Just to speak briefly on the in furtherance that counsel for the government noted, every government case that was cited by the government, it is statements between co-conspirators. None holds statements to police regarding past events are in furtherance. In fact, the reason is because this proves too much. If cooperating to end the stop furthers it, then every roadside statement is non-testimonial, and Davis and Hammonds evaporates. Further, we have the contradiction between her lies, which the government says show guilt, and their statement that it advances the venture. Which is it? Does it show consciousness of guilt, which then supposedly transfers miraculously to Nero, or is it advancing the venture? Nonetheless, Crawford by its nature is statements to co-conspirators. Its holding, its core holding, is that statements to police in response to their questions is testimonial. And that's what happened here. Her statements regarding the screwdriver, regarding him driving the vehicle from New Orleans to Houston, her statements with what he said are testimonial. Regarding the 801 exception, the 801 exception only applies to level one of the hearsay, his statements to her. It does not apply from what she relays to the officer are his statements. That's hearsay within hearsay. And there is no exception for that. And that is the testimonial statements that we should have been able to confront at trial. And that's why there's the Crawford violation, the confrontation violation here. Responding quickly to the government's argument, their substantive misstatement of facts as a collective action non-issue, but there's no evidence that Nero was associated with that other house. Remember, there were no charges ever filed against him. We ask for an acquittal or a new trial on the merits. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And counsel, we recognize that you're court appointed and we appreciate your service and you've done an excellent job. Thank you.
Thank you.
While counsel